SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219 XM, 201 Sports Zone, 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com. And what is it? Day five of the aftermath. The sequel. What can we call it? Derby 19. The aftermath, yeah. I think things are starting to die down. I think the weekend will go a long way. A resumption of major racing action. In fact, today you do have the stake in New York. You've got the flat out, which was lost to the weather. When? That would have been Oaks Day on Friday. When Belmont was scuttled after, I think, the fourth race, some lightning, and they waited an hour to run the fifth, and then they just said, you know what, we're done here today. But actually a good sequence, and I may end up, right after the show, I'll try to bang out the late pick four because it's a nice sequence, and they are on the turf. So the seventh race, which is a maiden group with what may be some nice horses, actually, the seventh race today at Belmont. And then there's a New York bred 6-furlong turf sprint on the inner. Nice allowance group. And then the flat out in between. And there's actually a nice full field, 12-5 fillies and mares sprinting to start the pick four. So nice sequence today. And in terms of normalcy, Saturday at Belmont, it's Man of War Day. Nice card. I think the weather's going to be all right from what we can tell. And you got some O'Brien Invaders, Magic Wand, and Hunting Horn. It's basically at the center of this, O'Brien and Chad Brown. But they're not the only thing going on in here. Jim Cassidy, who I talked to quite a bit on Saturday at Churchill, he's got that Epical, who you'll recall, right in the middle of all the Santa Anita issues. Epical with that stake win, and now coming east. So he's a part of that. How about some Channel Maker, Mont Rosario, Wachtel Barber, Randy Hill, and the Reeves? Can't run these races without Mike Maker. Mike Maker has got he's got an army of these types. Zulu Alpha shows up in here in Village King, and we mentioned Village King for Pletcher, and then Arklow, who came up with Brad Cox the other day. So a very nice Man of War. And the Peter Pan, not a big field for the Peter Pan, but a very interesting five horses that all have got some cachet. Intrepid Heart and Federal Case for the Lowe's and Todd Pletcher. Velasquez rides Intrepid Heart. Castellano on Federal Case. You'll recall Federal Case was the horse that we talked last fall with Rudy Brissett, and then Federal Case went through the sale, ended up in the hands of the Lowe's. Global Campaign, Stanley Huff has entered him everywhere, and he kept showing up on AE lists. And so Global Campaign in the Peter Pan. Sir Winston for Cassie, who's been keeping good company in the winter spring stakes lead ups, and Final Jeopardy. Gary and Mary West and Jason Service. He had his chance in the wood, ending immediately with the hubbub created by Jovia with the major what you would have hoped would have been the only traffic fiasco of the spring. Not so simple. Final Jeopardy, a very good five in the Peter Pan, which will go early on that card on Saturday. The Vagrancy as well. Phillies and Mares sprinting. How about the Bogey as well? The grade three, mile and 16th for the Phillies and Mares on the turf. So a really good Man of War Saturday. Perfect intermezzo between Derby Day and Preakness Day. Also, the Hanshin Cup, as Arlington comes into focus for the first time this spring. Big field for the Grade 3 Hanshin. 11 of them. That's a nice group, too. And the Santa Barbara, the Santa Barbara, which they drew early, actually, for Santa Anita. And there's your graded stakes. There's some other good action, including the important grade one on the steeplechase front. Percy Warner, Nashville, the Iroquois on Saturday. We'll talk to Bill Gallo in about 30 minutes, 35 minutes or so. Check in with Bill. And boy, Jack Fisher on the jump front has been just unbelievable. He's just dominant right now. And has been here for, you know, the last season plus. So we'll talk about one of the really important grade ones of the season for the steeplechase set. And I guess I have to talk to Sean Clancy at some point and get admonished for not going down to Nashville. It's awkward. The travel arrangements are not easy. You know, in the back of my mind, I've said, all right, we'll stay in Churchill, pass Derby, you know, do some Derby postscript Monday, Tuesday, maybe even Wednesday, then drive down. It's about 3 hours to Nashville from the Ville, and set up shop and do a couple of days from, you know, from the Iroquois site. That will happen at some point, I promise. And speaking of travel arrangements, then of course I'd have to turn around and get to Baltimore. So we got to figure out how to make that work. Speaking of travel, I got to slip this in because it's been such a busy week and with such an intense, you know, afterward discussion of what transpired in Derby and the rest of the weekend, obviously, but. Tina never got to Louisville until 9:30. Until 9:30 on Saturday morning, got stuck in Philadelphia en route from Albany. Unbelievable. And American Airlines, just from every account that I was getting from Tina, they were just dismissive. Apparently, like four or five planes of theirs all came back to the terminal, and they did nothing. They did absolutely nothing. There wasn't a meal to be had. There wasn't any place anything to eat. There was no. They couldn't get them to a hotel. They couldn't do anything. And if Tina had relied on American, she wasn't going to get to Louisville until 2 o'clock on Saturday. It was just ridiculous. So she just booked her own ticket. She found a way on the first flight on Delta out of Philadelphia. She went to Detroit, and then she got to Muhammad Ali International. Can't call it Stanford anymore. And one of the funny sidebars to this is not that it was a pleasant evening, because she said nobody slept. I mean, people were trying to find a place to sleep. It was a mess. She said in Philadelphia they were very nice. The terminal people came around with blankets and pillows for people. City of brotherly love. It's like 3-4 o'clock in the morning, and Tina's on the phone with Delta, booking, you know, booking a new flight. And there's a younger girl in the, you know, sitting there with him, and she started to talk to Tina, you know, are you trying to get, yeah, we're trying to get to Louisville. And, you know, they start talking to each other. And next thing you know, you know, Tina says, well, you know, my husband does a radio show, blah, 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 the Derby. And she says, the girl says, what show? Well, it's At the Races with Steve Peck. And it was Aisling Carroll, Davey and Kim Carroll's daughter, who's working for equestrian legend Phil Dutton. So and she had been in contact with Davey and Kim, and they were worried about her. She had wanted to get to, you know, home to Louisville. She's, you know, she's living in Unionville, Pennsylvania, and she was trying to get home so that she could work some horses on Saturday at Churchill, you know, for her father and for the Cassie team. And I've known, you know, Declan and Aisling, I mean, since they were, you know, they were tiny, and it was pretty funny. So Dave and Kim were thrilled that Tina, you know, kind of escorted Aisling the rest of the way. It was pretty funny. So, but a very unpleasant evening. I mean, Tina did not sleep, which then necessitated me driving out of Louisville Saturday night. Usually Tina drives home. And instead I had to get behind the wheel. We got to Medina, which is our, you know, that's a tradition. We got to Medina and stayed there on Saturday night. We got there about 2 a.m. There was a wedding, actually. there was the after party for a wedding. 2 o'clock in the morning, I was a little surprised to walk into the hotel to get the keys and stuff. And there was like a raucous scene going on, 2 o'clock in the morning. And also, I got to mention, we also had occasion, we wanted to stop for dinner. It got to be about, I don't know, it must have been about 9 o'clock, 8:30, 9 o'clock by the time we got to Cincinnati, and had the inspiration to go to Walt's Hitching Post, where I had not been in ages. And Walt's Hitching Post, a Latonia tradition, racetrackers, Turfway, Latonia, forever. And there was a period where Waltz was closed. They I think 2008 maybe, and then they reopened the new ownership. And I met one of the partners, Donnie Arnsparger, and you know, there's all kinds of horse racing memorabilia and imagery, artwork and wind photos, and oh my God, it's great. And I had not been there since my P&G days in Cincinnati, and we used to go to Waltz. And the ribs were always the thing. And now I guess a little bit more, the steaks have become kind of their thing. The ribs are still there. Ribs are still part of the menu. But for years it was ribs. You know, Cincinnati was a great rib town. Montgomery Inn, Waltz. And there was the absolute hidden gem, which was the Barn Rib Pit in Gano Alley, which was a speakeasy at one time. Rusty Staub's favorite restaurant on the road. The Barn Rib Pit. And I know you're listening, those of you that lived around Cincinnati and northern Kentucky, the tri-state area. WLW. 700, the big one. Pretty funny. So great postscript to the Derby insanity. I spent, you know, Tina was sort of bleary-eyed and half asleep, and I just kept mulling over the situation. And all the rest of the way home on Sunday. I mean, the other 12, you know, whatever it was, another 9-10 hours. And I like everybody else. I'll tell you one thing about this. It is astounding how fascinated the general public is by this DQ. It's absolutely everywhere. continues to be. It's pretty funny. I'm this morning in the Washington Post. There's a bunch more, and I'm kind of amused by, you know, the public wants to understand this, which is great. It's great. I mean, we understand it. We deal with it every day. So the I think it's good for us. I think it's good for, you know, the fact that I know people are going to potentially be looking next Saturday at Preakness for, you know, maximum security and Country House and not really understand why they're not there. But that's all right. They can learn that too. That's fine. And speaking of which, the latest, you know, we talked to you about the defections, Mr. Money out, win in, as I told you, and we'll see if anybody else wants to enter the fray for that Preakness lineup. I had to turn in the Express Bet Preakness Stake wagering guide. My entry, and I surprised myself a little, which is, you know, it's funny because when you don't look at these and all of a sudden you look at it and you try to quickly get a handle on the Preakness, you know, the short turnaround, you know, obviously you're speculating who's going to be involved and so forth. But when I looked at this, the more I looked at it, we once again are going to be talking about a lack of pace. There's not a lot of speed. Excuse me. Mr. Money, his potential involvement was going to be important, I think, because he, you know, coming out of the one turn mile, he was going to add some early lick, but without Mr. Money, always mining, obviously, is going to be the controlling speed. And, you know, take it from there. So, Always Mining will be trying to do two things. I'll give you a little hint, a little preview. He would be the first Maryland bred since Deputed Testimony, 1983, to win the Preakness, and he would be the first gelding since Funnyside. Maryland bred, that's a good point. You should go back and see among Maryland bred winners. There haven't been a tremendous amount of them, but I wonder if there's been a Maryland bred gelding. Have to dig further. That's a good question. Kelly Rubley with a big shot here. There's no doubt. So the Preakness on the horizon. Also on the horizon today, beside Bill Gallo to talk the Iroquois, Dick Powell is going to join us next. We'll make a quick stop with Tony. We talked to Tony obviously Monday, but I want to get a little more with him. Steve Haskin. Later, Nick Casado, Slam Dunk Racing. As promised, we're going to talk to Nick about his operation. They had a big, big day between the Senorita win and the Distaff Turf win at Churchill. I think John Parada is going to stop by, and we'll get to Rich Eng. A lot going on at the races. Back after this, Dick Powell.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The 145th Kentucky Derby is in the books, and it was a wild one. Now it's off to Baltimore for the second leg of the Triple Crown. Can Country House rebound in 2 weeks with another solid performance, or will a new face smile at Pimlico? See what the experts have to say in Express Bet's free Preakness Wager Guide. That's right, the guide is free to everyone and available online at expressbet.com. Inside the guide, you'll find expert selections, analysis, and suggested $100 wagering strategies from some of the game's sharpest handicappers, writers, and broadcasters. Don't plunk down your hard-earned bread until you've read what these guys have to say. Also, ExpressBet's free Preakness Wager Guide provides you with important stats and trends you won't find anywhere else. Visit ExpressBet.com to access the free Preakness Wager Guide beginning Friday, May 10th, and an updated version that includes Eddie Olczyk's picks May 16th. Open a new ExpressBet account and get up to a $500 welcome bonus. Visit the website for complete details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
We're back at the races, about 20 plus into hour one on this Thursday, catching up with Dick Powell. We didn't talk to Dick last week. That was my fault. That, you know, obviously the Thursday and Friday was just breakneck speed. And actually, Dick, you know, Dick's got his analysis for Brisnet and Twin Spires. So by all rights, we weren't going to get opinion because it's purveyed. So. Chance now to catch up with Dick, and we certainly can get his valuable post analysis. Dick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I'm looking back at something I wrote on September 25th, and my lead sentence is, does it count even when the stewards get it right using the wrong process? Saturday's million-dollar Cotillion Stakes, the Three Royal Fillies, was a perfect example of the stewards eventually making the correct call, but it was up to them. That would not have been a correct call. Huh? Then I go through the process of Monomoy's girl and Midnight Beast who battling through the lane. Obviously, something's going on. They're weaving in and out, and there's no inquiry sign. But finally, Mike Smith files claim, and let me pick it up where I said, so we had the leader in the million-dollar race, weaving all through the stretch, just a matter of time when the inquiry sign would be lit by the stewards, but it wasn't. Coming off what we saw at Saratoga, meaning the personal ensign, Why would I be surprised? But I'm always surprised. I must have some kind of unwavering belief that they will get it right. It wasn't until Mike Smith filed an objection to the light of the official, unofficial one that starts to blink. But what if Mike didn't claim? It's not a rhetorical question. Since Midnight Beast was owned by a partnership that includes Madigan Stables, Saul Kuhlman, and Monomoy Girl is owned by a partnership that includes Monomoy Girl, Monomoy Stables, Saul Kuhlman. Not that losing the continuum will affect the Eclipse Award, but many writers might have thought twice about claiming against an owner that seems to own a piece of every big horse in America. Stewards were bailed out by Smith when he filed his objection. They looked at it. They took it down. So now we fast forward to last Saturday. Had they just posted the inquiry sign, all this chatter about who claimed foul and who was told to claim foul and what the process was, you know, when they claimed foul and how late they claimed foul, all of that would have been a non-issue. You put the inquiry up, you see something happen at the top of the stretch, and I'm not, and with Monomoy's Girl and the personal ensign, I wasn't even commenting on the decision to do what they did. I was commenting on the process that they took that leaves all these questions open. So sure enough, Saturday, in front of a lot of people, a lot of non-racing people, no one could figure out what was going on.
Not a question necessarily of not figuring out, you know, we know some of the information came in bits and pieces, and even, you know, even now we're not entirely positive, but there was at least the one objection, and I don't know, I don't want to speculate on what would be discussed now. I think everybody knows what would be discussed if there hadn't been the objection and with no inquiry, and I don't want to say a quick official, but, you know, an official, there would be the debate of, we'd be having the same debate on whether there should have been both, and that in itself would have been interesting. Dick, you explained when we had that conversation about the, you know, the Category 1, Category 2, what would be different in your mind under the Category 1 system in this case?
The Category 1 system would not take into account whether War of Will was going to continue on and finish in the money.
Yes.
Whether the others who were fouled would have continued on. I don't know how any steward can make that judgment. If I got stepped on, if I had a shoe loosened, if I had some kind of incident like that happen, how can I be expected to run on through the stretch? I mean, I've already, you know, let's say I got hit turned sideways, something like that. I mean, I now have to be in the photo to be part of the discussion. I mean, I just, and what I do, and I know I annoy Pat Cummings with this, but I continue to do so. Dr. Fagan cuts, ask Tony Black, Dr. Fagan cuts off in reality going into the first turn of the Jersey Derby, wins by 6. What do? You take him down every time, every single time. And makes for a safer sport. And what I've pointed out to stewards is the herding in racing has gotten out of control, that jocks are drifting in, drifting out with no consequences. And I think it's dangerous. It borders on reckless. And I know there's a lot of money on the line, but if any jock, Luis Saez or anyone knew that, man, if I just step over this line a little bit, I got a chance of being taken down and really hurt my business and cost me a lot of money, maybe they just ride straight to the wire and they don't worry about riding everyone else's horse. So to me, Category 1 makes the most sense. And this whole thing about, you know, scenario 2 in Europe. I mean, I've seen races in Europe where horses were weaving in and out in the track, and just how do you not disqualify that horse? And they said, well, it didn't affect the outcome, didn't cost the other horse a place. And well, I don't know how people can say that with a straight face. I mean, War of Will was making a strong move. Now, what I wrote in my column on Twin Spires was I felt War of Will came out on Long Range Toddy. I thought Tyler had no room to go. He had loaded up and a horse ready to go, and he knew Maximum Security was not going to back up. So he kind of barges his way out, and barges into long range Toddy. Then Louie comes out a couple of pets into War of Will, which causes chain reaction, you know. And then it was a mess. But had the light blinked soon enough, where suddenly there's a steward's inquiry. So now the information about who filed claim and all that stuff would have been far less relevant than the way it turned out, and far less confusing for the viewers who were at home trying to figure it out. And NBC has a tough job because they're down on the ground. They have people right there, and no one knows what's going on. You know, the trainers are looking towards the tote board. They're trying to see what's going on. They're trying to see the replay. I mean, Mark Cassidy and those guys barely see the race. Baffert's smart. He stays in the back there, and he gets to watch it on a TV right above him. But if you walk down with the horses down to the gap and stay down there, you don't really get to see much of the race. So whether your jock should claim foul or not, you're not really in that position. So maybe the jock should, maybe the jock shouldn't. But if the stewards do the right thing, then it's not up to the jock to decide, I'm going to claim a foul. And what if no one claimed foul? That's always been my question.
Right.
What if no one claimed foul? And then the answer is the 2015, I think, was Florida Derby with materiality and Rick Violet's horse. Well, it was sold back. There was a bump in the stretch. Last race of the day. It's getting dark. There's no inquiry. There's no nothing. Rick, to the day he died, was pissed off over that.
Yep.
So what if there's no claim of foul? Or what if the claim of foul doesn't get heard or transmitted or something like that? So if you're watching the races, you saw something happen at the top of the stretch. Something out of the norm. I know it's a big field. I know there's lots of jostling and things like that. But you saw something out of the norm. So, blink the light. Everyone focuses on that. When claims foul, it becomes irrelevant. But they didn't.
Yeah, and there were, as I said to Andy Beyer, and what's going to be problematic, and people are already asking this question, is what does this, what does this establish going forward? And, maybe we go another, 15 years before there's a situation. But it certainly is going to invite claims, and the question is, where else, obviously, can these occur? Because as I said to Beyer on Monday, if this had happened in the first turn, it's incidental, and it's part of, the jockeying for position that goes on in this race, and things that come forward right out of the gate, and, as everybody's trying to find their spot, I don't know. It's going to open up potentially, more issues. I don't know. I don't know where they go from here. We'll find out next May.
Well, we have stewards who have a job to determine whether a foul happens, but they seem to have trouble lighting the inquiry light, which gives us the impression, may not be true, that they are looking at the race. But they're not telling us they're looking at the race, and we're not getting the replays that they're looking at when they don't light the inquiry light. So, to me, there's three things. Did a foul occur? Did you press the inquiry light to let the public know you're looking at it? And now you're going to add another layer as to whether it affected the outcome of the race. Well, if you're having trouble with the first two, me as a bettor, I'm kind of laying a 1,000 to 1. And you might have trouble with the third layer.
Well, otherwise,
it's not a nice thing to say. It's not a nice thing to say, Steve. But I said this to about 30 stewards last June at the University of Louisville accreditation program.
Right.
And they were not happy. But if they had a gun, I think they would have shot me right there. And my final pitch to them was, optics matter.
Yeah.
And message not received.
That part, well, agreed.
Give it a shot.
Exactly. You know where you stand, right? That part of it, and we'll see what comes out of today's meeting between Gary West and I'm sure he'll have an attorney in tow and Ben Glass and hopefully they. I know now people are saying, well, you know, Mr. West was, you know, handled this with such grace and on Sunday, and now they're turning around and kind of attacking, and saying, oh, he's a sore loser. No, that's not fair. He would have gone a long way had they met with him Saturday night or said, you know what, let's all go home and let's sit down tomorrow morning. I mean, they really did this process no favors by stonewalling him.
No.
And the media. No. I mean, it's... And I'm very surprised, given the incredible firestorm that resulted out of the Life of 10 circumstance, that they weren't more responsive and more cognizant of the need to be, you know, as absolutely open as possible. That part is a little mystifying, frankly.
And Life at 10 was the last race of the day, that Friday evening. Now, Saturday, the reason why they couldn't come up with an immediate response was they still had a couple more races to run. So it's a long night. They're still working. They still have things to do and stuff like that. And no one ever explained this really on their behalf. We have a couple more races. So the last race was, what, 8:30, something like that. They got to wrap up their business, so now it's maybe 9 o'clock. Okay, and then the reason why, well, why Thursday? Well, Thursday was the next Churchill racing day. There was no racing on Sunday.
Right.
No racing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So it goes to Thursday. So that looked bad. But once again, optics matter. So if you explain the optics, if you just explain, we can't give you decisions. It'd be like me running into a NBA locker room at halftime, screaming at an official, I'm in the media, why did you make that call? And, well, you got to wait till after the game, and we'll send out one of the refs to maybe talk. Not going to happen at halftime. So they still had, you know, the event was still going on. There was still races going on at Churchill. But it just shows you the risk we take every day with processes that are not tightened up, nailed down, followed religiously, and here is our biggest day, biggest race, and it just got exposed. And I'm not even. I felt the horse should be taken down. That's just me. But the process, I don't know how anyone can really defend the process.
I appreciate it. And, you know, you've got that international perspective. We'll talk in a minute about last week and the nice Champions Day results. And I actually was up early enough to enjoy it. But before we do that, some other impressions, I mean, overall, and you know, what surprised you? And, of course, wet track throws a wrench in everything anyway. But what elements of Saturday came as a surprise, and who were you impressed with overall over the weekend?
Well, I bet Gary West's other horse, who doesn't really get mentioned anymore, Game Winner, who gets
crazy
knocked out at the start, made a gigantic rally out of the middle of the track on a track that was not easy to grip, and he ran fantastic. Tacitus ran fantastic. Tacitus looked like Mendelsohn last year. Anyone remembers Mendelsohn? The middle mile of the mile and a quarter derby was fantastic. Mendelsohn was almost running over horses. And Tacitus got wiped out at the start. Then he really running into the spray and just showing all sorts of courage and right through the lane, rallying, strong as could be. Johnny's horse, I thought, ran well, but, you know, you get that trip up the rail and you got to kick on, and he wasn't able to kick on, so he kind of flattened out. And I've always expected with Code of Honor, he's outdone himself on dirt. I always expected that with all these three-year-old turf races coming up with million-dollar purses, I always expected the Code of Honor would show up, the Belmont Derby or something like that, and the subsequent races. And I think he's earned them. He's earned it because he won the Fountain of Youth, and he's run well enough to show that he can run with these horses. But I've always expected him with his pedigree to be a turf horse. So we'll see where they go from here. But it was just the track is playing one way, and then that drenching rain came, and it was similar to when Always Dreamin' won the Derby. There was an hour before the race, big rainstorm that affected the track and made that soupy consistency, same as Super Saver when he won and Justify last year. So it's who's going to grab it, who's going to benefit from it. Speed seemed to hold up pretty well. Some of the horses that were up early hung around a long time. I look at the horses that were making up ground into the bias, like Game Winner, like Tacitus. So I think it sets up a pretty good Belmont. And Preakness, I'm a fan of Another Twist of Fate. And I think as a handicap, but just as a general statement, I think anyone racing on that track in the Derby, not earlier in the day, but in the Derby, might have trouble coming back in 2 weeks. I mean, shoes get loosened. I mean, all sorts of problems happen racing on that kind of surface. And I'd be kind of negative. I'd be, negative on horses coming out of the Derby and looking for a horse like Another Twist of Fate or someone like him that could pop up with Pimlico.
Well, historically, the horses coming out of Derby have been successful, even when even the ones that don't necessarily run A races. I mean, you think about and wet track, as was brought up last year, wet track derbies have been particularly tough on Derby winners. We're not going to have to worry about the Derby winners in this particular case. Orb and Always Dreaming, both misfired coming out of their Derby wins, but Justify succeeded. And, I mean, a horse like Oxbow, who had been beaten in Orb's Derby, he came back and ran a tremendous race after actually, running a very good race. In fact, you can compare Oxbow's Derby probably to War of Wills or Improbables to some degree. War of Will may be more so because he was closer to the pace, although not much closer. They both were, in attendance. So I think you still do look to the Derby horses, Dick. Historically, that 17 of the last 20 Preakness winners have come out of Derby. Only Bernardini and Rachel Alexandra and Cloud Computing are the only three in the last two decades to win this race next Saturday without participating. And technically, it's funny. Technically, Rachel, you could say that if Rachel had run on Saturday instead of Friday, she probably wins that Derby. And it obviously, Bernardini, not that Bernardini deserves an asterisk, but, the race obviously marred by Barbaro's injury. So even two of the races that were won by horses that didn't run in Derby are unusual circumstances. And frankly, Classic Empire, what did he get beat by by Cloud Computing? I mean, that was dead tight. So even Classic Empire's second in Cloud Computing's Derby, I understand the theme, but I would caution people to be very aware of improbable and war of will in here, as well as win-win-win, who looks to run. And we're waiting for Bodie Express to make a decision.
Cancel plan A.
It's only because I just literally. I just literally yesterday was. You're not wrong. You're not wrong about the Wet Track Derby winners that have struggled. That is true, but we don't have to worry about them this year.
Well, the best example of a horse running bad in the Derby was Hansel, who ran so bad, they trucked him back to Arlington and then realized maybe we'll give another shot. So they sent him to Baltimore, and he wins the Preakness, and he won the Belmont, right?
Absolutely, and we've discussed that with Frankie Brothers too. When Hansel passed away recently, we had that conversation with Frank. He told the whole story because Frank was devastated and stunned by what transpired in the Derby.
Yeah, and to truck him up to Chicago, it must have been a long van ride. To, licking your wounds after the Derby when you expected to run great, and then they wisely persevered and carried on. And I remember Jerry gave him a great ride in the Belmont. Man, Jerry was great. But yeah, it's a once a year occurrence that we don't replicate any other time. And this whole, I know 20 horses is a lot. I mean, I get that. With a mile and a quarter start, with the quarter mile run into the first turn, to compare it to the 14 in the Oaks, well, you're kind of comparing apples to apples there, because we're not running 20 at a mile and an eighth. We're running 20 at a mile and a quarter, where they do have time to sort themselves out. The gate issue might be a problem, and maybe they can somehow build a 20-horse starting gate. That would be nice. It would give a little bit more room to the inside horse and not have to squeeze out. Not that Ward will have it, because with the scratches he broke from post two, actually. But there's a lot of talk after the race about that, and I think that's a factor of the year. And I heard you mention the other day with Little Current and everything. I mean, we've had more than 20. We limited to 20. We could have more than 21 a run. And lately, it's been formful, regardless of the horse getting put up at 65-1. But it's been relatively fair. I mean, you get your horses get in trouble, but look at the trouble Game Winner got into in Six Horse Fields. It wasn't that much different than what he got into on Saturday, other than more horses to go around and rallying from farther back. So relatively speaking, it was not much different. You can get in trouble in short fields. You can get in trouble in big fields. I don't mind the 20s.
I agree.
Mr. West, I think he was, I get pissed off. I think I shouldn't have said either. But hopefully, I would just hope, like you had mentioned, if he doesn't get the resolution he's seeking, at least get something out of it to recognize that, man, my horse showed up on the biggest day of the year and he ran lights out, and be proud of that, and be proud of the feeling when he hit the wire, and up until it wasn't, and not many people are going to experience that, and he was able to experience that.
That's true. That's a fair point. The thing with Gary West that's from his horse playing, because he's a serious player. He plays in contests. He's a better, and he knows. I mean, deep down, he knows that. This is the worst takedown of all time. Obviously, I mean, but it won't be the last time he's taken down as a player. That's what's so remarkable about this, Dick, that, you know, we all deal with it. I mean, I mentioned right away on Monday, I got taken down for you know, $25,000 at mm-hmm. at Del Mar in a pick six, and it was a 50-50 call, and what are you supposed to do? this is, you know, this is the life we've chosen.
Yeah,
I didn't ask who was in the steward stand. Let's talk about what went on, Dick, going back to last week. That was fun. Beauty Generation. Talk about those results at Hong Kong on Champions Day. Well, it really lived up to expectation.
With Winx retired, Beauty Generation is now the highest rated turf horse racing currently. And he just dominated again. I think he has a race coming up in Japan, which will be great to put him into international competition. No one was really willing to ship him to Hong Kong for his race. That race usually gets a lot of shippers, and it didn't. And he's just a push-button horse. He has more gears than everyone. He's just flawless in his racing. And just, I'd love to see more horses ship in and take him on, but they're probably not going to do that. So he's probably going to have to hit the road. But Hong Kong has such a great program. You know, why would you go on the road? But he was tremendous. And the interesting thing, Steve, was the QE2, which is the longer race, the Japanese horse at 28-1 came in and upset that. And the Japanese are just known for breeding stout horses. And they just run. And as the rest of the world has shortened up with pedigrees and shortening distances of stake races and things like that, Japan still breeds mile and a half horses. And if they catch firm turf, they're even more dangerous. There was a time about 10 years ago when they ran 1-2 in the Melbourne Cup, and it just looked like the Japanese are just going to dominate the Melbourne Cup every year. Well, there's been shipping issues, there's been quarantine issues. There's things that keep horses from going from one country to another. And it's not, as it's been explained to me, it's not that difficult to ship into a country. The difficulty is shipping back to where you came from. Because once you go into this country, you're technically exposed to certain things, and they may not let you back until you go through a much, much longer quarantine. So we don't get the free market of horses shipping all over the world like we'd like to see. But once again, a Japanese horse came in and won the QE2 at big, big odds and looked pretty good doing it. Yesterday was interesting, Steve, at Happy Valley. All the races were on the all-weather track. No turf racing yesterday, which is a tremendous luxury for them that they can rest their turf course of, you know, basically 2 weeks without any turf racing yesterday. And I looked up the numbers. They sent me the handle figures and stuff like that. And sure enough, they bet $160 million U.S. in the 8 races. And they did their normal average of $20 million per race on the all-weather. So the all-weather certainly does not hurt their handle figures. It certainly doesn't hurt field size, because they had full fields and then some yesterday. And Zach Purton won 2, Jal Marrero won 2, Karis Teton won 2, and then the trainers, Frankie Law and YS Choi, each had a pair of winners. A couple of nice prices, pretty formful on the day. What I liked yesterday was there was quite a few races at Happy Valley where the favorite was like 4-1. You know, you didn't have any big heavy odds on the favorites yesterday. You had some good, solid, spread-out type races. Favorites might have still won, but you got a decent return for them. Now, this week, I'm paying attention, Sha-Tin runs on Saturday, not Sunday. So this is one of the days where they switch up on me. And they're running the Hong Kong Macau Trophy, which is an interesting race. I'm not going to handicap it because they sent out a wonderful press release about the Macau horses shipping in, but come on. I'd be only guessing as to pick a horse in this race, but it's a big purse. It's over $500,000 purse. And that's race number 7, going 7 furlongs. But for a pick, couple picks, we'll go to race number 8. This is a 60-80 handicap going 1,200 meters. I like number 7, Nordic Warrior. I think I might have picked this horse another time. And Nordic Warrior is coming out of a race at Happy Valley where it rallied pretty well, got blocked late. Time before that, won in a nice performance. That was outside of Hong Kong. And he comes back into Hong Kong. Matt Chadwick's going to ride US Post 3. Looks to be a one-dimensional closer, pretty far back, but at least will save ground. And that long stretch, he can find a seam and run through. He'll be good. Now in Hong Kong, give an example, Steve. We have big, crowded, bulky fields, but you don't see riders hurting and doing that stuff because they're very, very strict with enforcing the rules of racing. So if there's a seam, they'll go through it, and it'll get written up in the stewards' report, which are extremely detailed. But even with bulky fields, because when they turn for home, there's about 10 horses spread out across the track. But hopefully Nordic Warrior can find a seam in race number 8. He is number 7. Also underneath him, I'm going to go with number 2, Utopia Life, who had a good win. 2 starts back at Shotton, even 4th last time out. And now picks up Zach Purton. Last time out, he had post 14. Today, he gets post 11. A little bit of relief from that. Going 6 furlongs in the other race we're going to tout is race number 9. This is a straightaway 1,000-meter sprint. These are classy horses, 80 to 105. And we get to some Dubai all the time with the really top handicap horses usually run ratings like this. Speed Vision, number 6, is the son of Helmet. He's an Australian sire, and I believe Helmet is the sire of Under Snow. Frankie Moore is the trainer of the Speedball, who looks like it can make the lead from post 14. I'm not terribly worried. He has an apprentice rider on him. But from post 14, he'll be on the far outside, so he shouldn't have too much traffic. And the horse just looks naturally gifted enough that the 2 races that he's won in his last 3 starts, when he's made the lead, he's won. So with the lighter weight today, I think he's very dangerous. Frankie Lord knows how to spot him. So that's number 6, Speed Vision, in race number 9. And throw in number 10, Montreal, another Speedball. This one breaking from the rail, but once again going on the straightaway. The rail will be okay. And this one, Karis Teton, who had 2 winners, will be the rider. If you use the form guide that I recommend, when you go to hkjc.com and go to racing, then go to local and then form, the last page is called Speed Map. And it gives every race, and it gives you a visual depiction of where the horses are going to be early in the race. But what's very important is read the comments about who's going to go, who's not going to go, who's a little bit inconsistent out of the gate, so can't be dependent on to make the lead. But there's just different things like that. This is just a tremendous tool. It's easy to find because it's the last page in the form guide that Hong Kong produces for their players, and their players appreciate it to the tune of $20 million bet per race.
Well, I appreciate it. And, Dick, we'll talk to you from Baltimore next week.
Okay, Steve. Thanks a lot.
Dick Powell, everybody. And a little bit of post-derby. And last week ago, Saturday night, Sunday morning, the Champions Day, Hong Kong Jockey Club, hkjc.com. Let's take a break. Top of the hour here. And Bill Gallo going to jump a fence when we come back. We'll talk to Dick about the action at Iroquois on Saturday, big grade one, and one of the important jump races of the year. Right now, everything going through Jack Fisher, Scorpion Answer in here. Bill Gallo jumps in next.